Chapter 3. Dark Unities.
"Where are we?" the lion demanded.
"Still unknown," said Holguin, voted lieutenant of the Deathwing. He observed the fury in his Primarch's eyes. There was far more than frustration there. The lion had truly expected to reach Terra. He was reacting to the failure and confusion with anger reserved for betrayal. Holguin could guess why. He wished he could not. He felt the urge to speak, to sound a warning. He knew how it would be received. He said nothing. The right moment might never come. This, though, was the worst. The invincible reason shuddered, straining to keep to its course. Roiling gravitational forces battered the Dark Angel's fleet almost as violently as the tempest in the Empyrean. The vessels had translated into the Materium on the edge of a system caught in a maelstrom. The boundary of the system was marked by a barrier of furious warp flame. Ahead and to port, billions of miles of madness exploded and stormed. The wall was an aurora of blood. It billowed with such violence that the lion could hear the roar of tortured existence in his soul. Cyclonic currents the size of gas giants collided, merged, and broke asunder. The engines of the fleet strained to move the ships away from the embrace of disaster. Beyond the barrier, the ruin storm boiled across the void. A violent bruise of eye-searing colours filled the darkness. No stars were visible. The Auspex officer was in communication with Lady Therilyn Fianna, the chief navigator, in her cell. They were struggling to get a fix on the fleet's location with almost no viable data.
"Your disapproval is deafening, Lady Fianna," the lion said.
"I have not spoken, my lord,"
she said over the ship's internal vox.
"Even so."
"I have no control over our journey," she said. "I therefore have little to go on to discover where we are. I think the means of our jump would be the first place to turn for answers."
"I want your evaluation first," said the lion.
He doesn't trust it, Holguin thought, and was glad. Some distance between the Primarch and the Thing in the Dark Chamber would be welcome. In the near space of the barrier, between it and the Dark Angel's fleet, was a graveyard of ships. Metal corpses tumbled slowly, caught in the random currents and bursts of gravity. Holguin saw two ships collide. They disintegrated, fragments spinning lazily off, glinting dully in the glare of the ruin storm. "Do we know anything about this wreckage?" he asked.
"The craft are not warp-capable," Fianna said. "Beyond that, we can't tell. If we could identify where they came from, proximity might suggest where we are now."
The lion's gaze was fixed on the warp storm. Holguin could not look at the vortex for more than a few moments at a time. The colours and movements ate at his mind, filling his thoughts with monstrous irrationalities, the fragments of waking nightmares. The lion stared at the storm as if he had pierced through its secrets by will alone.
"This system," said the lion, "it is so far gone. The event here is immense. Its traces must be felt from this location."
"I agree," said Fianna. "If we had any readings at all of other stars, we might be able to factor in the distortion and form a hypothesis. The upheaval might even be detectable by others much further away."
"A dark beacon," Holguin muttered.
"Exactly. But we are too close."
"So there is nothing you can tell me?" the lion said.
"That is correct."
The Primarch glared at the oculus a few moments longer, the green of his eyes going beyond ice, becoming sharp as a rapier.
"Keep at it," he ordered.
He turned on his heel and strode from the bridge. Instinct urged Holguin to follow the lion and be present when his lord confronted the thing that had brought the fleet here. Wisdom told him to stay where he was. The lion, in his fury, would not tolerate any other presences at this encounter. The servitor puppet walked towards the lion as he entered the chamber of Tucholcha. The stench of the degrading body wafted before it. The boy thing's gait was stiff. The puppet was already halfway to the entrance when the doors slid back. Tucholcha's anticipation of his arrival was unpleasant. It was too knowing.
"I read anger in your face," said the boy.
But that is too easy a task to count as progress, I think. Your expression at this moment is not a challenge.
I told you to take me to Terra, the lion said.
He looked past the puppet and addressed to Chulcha itself. The gold flecks in the black and grey sphere moved more quickly for a moment, as if they were the shifting thoughts of the artifact. Cables linked to Chulcha to the spinal implants of the servitor. A split second after the burst of movement in the gold, the boy smiled, revealing blackened gums. It had lost more teeth during the passage through the warp. A clump of lank hair dropped from its mottled scalp to the deck.
True,
the boy said.
You did ask me to take you there.
You disobeyed me, the lion snarled.
Did I say that I would bring you to Terra?
The question gave the lion pause. Before every other jump, Tucholcha's puppet had confirmed the destination. This time the boy had said, I will make the necessary jump.
Your sophistry will be your doom, the lion said.
He drew his chainsword and it growled. It was an ancient weapon, too large to be wielded by any son of Caliban except the lion. It had been forgotten in the depths of Alduruk, waiting for the lion to appear and claim it. Its provenance had been lost. It had had no name before his coming. For the lion, it would always be the wolf blade. With it, he had carved his way through the Knights of Lupus, ending their challenge to the Order and their corrupt use of the great beasts. The blade was a dull black, except for the silver inlay of runic teeth. The chainsword was a brutal exterminator. It had none of the beauty of the lion's sword, and there was no artistry in its kills. There was only finality. The lion raised it now, a single provocation away from cutting down the servitor. He did not know how to destroy Tucholcha, but he was ready to explore every method. The servitor cocked its head at the snarl of the wolf blade. The expression on its decaying face was simple interest.
I did not betray you,
Tucholcha said.
Then why are we not at Terra?
That journey is too far, the storm too great. It is beyond my reach.
I find that hard to believe.
It is the truth. Do you prefer to believe I am omnipotent?
The thing mocked.
Is that more comforting?
The lion lowered the chainsword, though he did not silence its engine. The teeth whirred around the edge of the blade.
Tell me what you have done, he said.
I've taken you where you must go, if you wish to find Terra.
Have you?
He was suspicious, but he had not known Tucholcha to lie to him yet.
So where are we?
Pandarax.
The puppet smiled, and the lion's vox-speed buzzed for his attention. My lord, said Holguin, a warship is approaching. The bells tolled, and the demons chanted. They spilled through the tear in the reel and onto the bridge. Their voices were thick with phlegm and the buzzing of flies that flew in streams from between their lips. They were bulbous, rotting monsters. Their stench was an assault, a wall of gas emanating from ruptured organs and weeping innards. Clusters of open sores covered their flesh. The demons were diseased. They were shambling creatures in the full blossom of decay. Yet their chanting, low and liquid and hollow, was also a kind of laughter, an expansive celebration of their condition, and a promise to the universe that they had come to share the gift. The abominations were joyful. Their joy was a horror, but it was also freely exultant in a way that Sanguinius could barely imagine any more. Joy had been foreign to him for so long he was not sure he had ever truly experienced it. What happiness he could remember was a shadowed thing, haunted by the curse his blood had brought to his sons. That monsters could revel in such unbridled joy was intolerable. In fury, Sanguinius launched himself across the bridge, wings opened wide, and came down in the midst of the demons. Ascalon called out to him as the sanguinary guard rushed forwards. Sanguinius barely heard him. He allowed himself the luxury of this moment of rage. Even then, he attacked with precision. The angel struck the demons midway between the front of their horde and the rear. A demon burst apart under the impact of his descent. Bile, pus, and rotting ichor splashed wide, liquid plague tainting the Red Tears bridge. Sanguinius swept the blade and carmine before him. It sliced through demon flesh as if through air. Its purity burned the bloated tissue and boiled ichor to steam. Decapitated horrors fell, their pitted blades clattering to the deck.
"Be gone from my ship!"
Sanguinius bellowed. He thrust the spear of Telesto before him. The blast from the tip cut a swathe through the demons, incinerating them in a line that stretched to the mouth of the breach. The edges of the fissure trembled as if recoiling from the angel's wrath. Iron blades clashed against his armour from behind. Sanguinius ignored the attacks, and in the next instant the demons turned away from him to confront the advance of the sanguinary guard through their ranks. Sanguinius marched forwards, destroying abominations with sword and spear, cutting short the obscene chants.
"We destroyed worse than you on Cygnus Prime!" he shouted at the demons. "You insult us with your presence!"
His anger was mixed with contempt as he slashed the monsters apart. Even so, he did not lose himself in the battle. "Be cautious," he thought. He had not seen these demons before. They were distinct in kind from the ones the Blood Angels had fought on Cygnus Prime. The difference was important. It spoke to the very nature of these beings. They were embodiments. Sanguinius had a vision of disease itself become sentient, become divine. He wanted to deny the vision and the horrors it implied. He knew better than to give in to the impulse. Gods were real, and they were malign. The sanguinary guard reached him.
"My lord,"
Ascalon began, an edge to his voice stopping just short of chiding.
"I know,"
said Sanguinius. "I make your task difficult." He loosed another blast from the spear of Telesto, turning a rush of demons to ash. "You are at my side now, Ascalon. Destroy the foe with me. These things are fit only to be trampled."
"They are still dangerous."
Blood Angels were containing the plague demons in the vicinity of the warp breach, but the traces of their foulness were reaching the wider area of the bridge. Officers had collapsed at their stations. Some vomited and shook with bone-racking fever. One man was still, his face a mass of overlapping boils. Servitors were slumped, liquefying flesh drooping from their machinic parts. Illness marched ahead of the battle, laying claim to the Red Tear.
"Hold them back!"
Sanguinius shouted, as two squads of Blood Angels thundered onto the bridge to join the sanguinary guard.
"Their taint goes not one step further. Tear them from reality! Send them back to the darkness of myth,"
he was about to say. But there was no going back to that state of history. Demons walked the galaxy. The myths had flesh and drew blood.
"We should have known," Sanguinius thought. "We should always have known. My sons and I, most of all. How could we believe there could be angels without demons?"
He thought of the inner monsters his legion had long fought, and how the horrors of the warp had brought them to the surface, almost destroying him and all the Blood Angels.
"My father told us there were no such things, and because we believed this to be true, we were vulnerable to them." Enough.
These doubts were unworthy. If he did not know why the Emperor had denied the existence of gods and demons, then the reasons were not his to know. Yet. He must have faith that he would learn in time. And he had faith. Faith that would burn the galaxy with its purity. He charged deeper into the demons, and the plague withered before his wrath. He brought light to the darkness, a purging, incinerating light. It blasted from the head of the spear of Telesto. It blazed from the length of the blade in carmine. But it came too from his being. He was in the centre of a blinding fire. He was the centre. The demons cried out. They fell, they burned, they disintegrated. Their existence was an insult to him, and everything he had given his life to forge. Yes, he would return them back to the darkness of myths. He would expunge even the memory of the myths. Bolter shells screamed on both sides. They were a destroying wind, ripping the abominations apart. Sanguinius marched towards the rift. He was inexorable. The demon's advance halted. It reversed. He waded through a dissolving mass of bodies and disintegrating weapons. The bell still sounded, but he thought he heard alarm in its toll now, a frantic, futile call to arms. At the mouth of the rift, demons still tried to force their way onto the bridge. They were hampered now by the immobilized crowd of their kin. Behind them, howling in the writhing darkness and infernal colours of the warp, still more demons raged to break through. There were other kinds of monsters there, alongside those the Blood Angels had fought on Cygnus Prime. Mingled with the demons of rage and change were creatures whose movements were sinuous, corrosive invitations to unnameable sensations. The tear in the bridge was a glimpse into an abyss of every foul hunger. It was an eye that opened onto the reality of souls, and that reality was hideous. "I deny you!" the angel shouted. He scythed through the demons. He slashed the blade and carmine across the front of the rift, from edge to edge. "I deny the lies! I deny the madness! My father's kingdom of reason will triumph!" Sanguinius cut through unflesh. A gash opened wide in the invisible veil between the materium and the warp. Blood erupted out of the air. The outline of the rift trembled. Sanguinius aimed another burst of the spear's power into the centre of the tear. He bellowed a curse and defiance as the cleansing lightning enveloped the abominations. They burst into flame and fell to ash before they could manifest themselves on the bridge. The demonic horde fell back. Around him, his sons battered the plague monsters out of existence. The smell of burned physaline filled his nostrils, the clean sting of battle cutting through the viscous stench of bodies bursting like overripe fruit. The breach trembled violently. Its edges lost definition. The space beyond became vague. The forms of the demons smeared into one another, and then into the contusions of the warp. Walls of unreality swept over them. The wall of the bridge became visible behind the breach, and then, with the hiss of a wounded serpent, the rift vanished. Sanguinius paused, reining in his anger. He turned around to survey the bridge. Many of the diseased crew members had stopped moving. Most of the officers were still at their posts. From the other side of the sealed doors, he heard bolter fire and the ululations of demons.
"The Encarnadine has repelled its incursion,"
Neverus called, her voice unwavering.
"New breaches on the Nine Crusaders and the Victus."
"The Victus," Ascalon said. "Amit will welcome the chance to exact some vengeance for Cygnus Prime."
Sanguinius picked up the undercurrent of concern in his voice. Of all the Blood Angels, the Flesh Terror and his Fifth Company were the most vulnerable to lapsing into the savagery of the thirst.
"We will all wreak that vengeance," Sanguinius replied.
"I have faith in you, Amit," he thought. "I must."
"We shall seal every breach with the blood of abominations."
He strode towards the door, the sanguinary guard flanking him. The red tear shook again. The deck heaved as if the battleship were cresting an immense wave, and then dropped, gravity tilting at a sharp angle. The Blood Angels kept their feet. The mortals had to cling to their workstations to stay upright.
"New contact,"
said Geron Mortis. The Auspex officer sounded worried.
"Identity?"
Sanguinius asked.
"I don't know, my lord."
Mortis frowned at his screen. None of the adjustments he was making to the scans were satisfying him.
"It's a shadow. I can't get anything more precise than that."
"Is it attacking?"
"Approaching. But as for a vector..."
Mortis trailed off. Sanguinius grimaced. The immaterium was not space. Even to speak of relative distance between ships was to attempt to impose an illusion on the indescribable. But the human mind needed its frames of reference.
"It's big,"
Mortis went on.
"You are being vague, Lieutenant," Raldoron warned. "At least tell us if this is a ship."
Sanguinius placed a calming hand on the first captain's pauldron.
"I'm sorry," said Mortis. "I can't. It's very big. It... I don't know. It's too big."
"Train our weapons on it," the angel said. "Fleetmaster, the command to fire is yours." "As you will, my lord," said Carminus.
Sanguinius nodded and headed for the doors. They opened before him, and he rushed out to cleanse his ship of invaders. As he ran towards the sounds of combat, he felt a shadow press in. It was just beyond the edge of his consciousness, yet it weighed on his heart like a planetary mass. He knew, beyond the excuses of reason, that it was the same shadow that Mortus had detected. And it was immense. The De Profundis splintered, and there were no good practicals.
"Our first volley did that," Caspian said. "Too easy."
"We didn't destroy it," said Gilliman. "We did exactly what they wanted us to do." For several moments, the fragments of the word-bearer's vessel stayed close enough together that they preserved its silhouette. It seemed to expand, the space between the pieces gradually widening. As the De Profundis closed with the Samothrace, it finally looked like what it was, a hail of jagged shards, a ship turned into shrapnel. Every sliver stabbed towards the Ultramarine's battleship. Gilliman read the contours of the trap and cursed what he saw. The word-bearers had closed off his options. If he redirected any power to the forged void shields, he opened the ship to destruction by the Night Lords or the World Eaters. If he didn't reinforce the forward defences, he was going to be hit by hundreds of boarding torpedoes at once. All he had left was weapons fire.
"Cover score!"
he called on the Vox.
"Coordinated fire on the De Profundis. Cut down that swarm."
"So ordered,"
Iasus answered. The Samothrace was already redirecting its artillery. The batteries of plasma projectors and macro cannons threw up a wall of incandescent destruction. Torpedoes streamed towards the intact shapes of the rest of the word-bearer's fleet.
"Up 30 degrees,
Gilliman said. It was too late to evade. The impacts were seconds away, but evading even a few shards could make a difference. The bow of the Samothrace began to rise above the ecliptic. The splinters of the De Profundis ran into the storm of fire from the two ultramarine ships. The void flashed with the disintegration of fragments. The Samothrace drove into clusters of explosions. It shuddered as more Night Lord torpedoes struck the stern. The Kavaskor tightened up with the battleship, trying to interpose its bulk with the long-range fire of the World Eaters. Gilliman heard Iasus over the Vox, roaring defiance at the 12th Legion. At this moment, the Chapter Master, one of the most thoughtful of Gilliman's commanders, sounded more than ever like he was one with the aggressive companies of destroyers he led. Void shields strained. Through the oculus, their pulses seared the eye. Bursts of ignited plasma marched along the flanks of the warships. The splinters hit, and still more of them blew apart as they collided with the shields. But there were scores behind them, and the forward shields of the Samothrace collapsed under a hail of impacts. The swarm smashed the bow. Shards broke up against the ablative armour. They came in at a shallow angle on the upper hull, streaking it with rolling fireballs. And they hit the superstructure. The change in the ship's orientation was enough to destroy still more. If they did not hit directly, they could not pierce the alloy of the ship's hide. Some did pierce it. Gilliman felt the blows even before the breech klaxon sounded. Needles stabbed into the body of the Samothrace, and poison flowed from them into its veins. One hit just below the bridge. The vibration of the impact was a quiver of pain, the spirit of the Samothrace reacting to a wound worse than the drawing of blood.
"With me,"
he said to Gorod and Prato. Gorod and the squad of bodyguards on the bridge formed up around their Primarch. To Caspian, Gilliman said,
"The bridge is yours."
Caspian slammed a fist against his breastplate.
"They won't set foot on this deck."
The Samothrace had already borne the insult of the word-bearer's presence over Kalth. Gilliman would not see it suffer the same indignity.
"All breached hulls sealed,"
said Ultusa. The splinters of the De Profundis were not true boarding torpedoes. They did not have the means to close rents in the hull with foam. The bleed of atmosphere to the void had triggered the automatic defence protocols. Gilliman drew the Gladius Incandor and the Arbitrator. He held the combi bolter before him as he marched out of the bridge, finger on the trigger and ready to deliver judgment. The Ultramarines ran into the enemy one level down from the bridge. The splinters had pushed the outer walls in when they hit, narrowing the corridors and filling them with wreckage. Gilliman waded into the first clutch of word-bearers. His lips were pulled back in hate. He pulled the trigger of the Arbitrator rapidly, the shots echoing the furious beat of his pulse. The traitors sprayed the halls with bolter fire. They were responding to his presence too quickly. Their shots smacked into his armour. The shells were nothing to him, a slight wind, a failed distraction. He ignored them. His shells hit the traitors like warheads. He shot the word-bearers through their helmets. Their heads burst, painting the walls with blood, gouging them with ceramite shrapnel. Gilliman marched past the first splinter and over the bodies. Though his actions were unhurried, he had slaughtered a squad of word-bearers before Gorod and his men could find a target. Ahead, the bulkhead was twisted and had failed to seal. A stiff wind of escaping atmosphere blew against his cheeks, pulling at him, calling him towards the next fight. Legion banners hanging from the ceiling swayed and flapped. The walls of the Samothrace rang with gunfire.
"We have numerous breach points," Gorod said.
"We will repel them," said Prato. "Our numbers far exceed those the enemy could possibly have inserted."
"Then why make the attempt?"
"Lord Gilliman," Althusser voxed, "the enemy has ceased bombardment of the Samothrace."
"And the Cavaskor?" Gilliman asked.
"Still under attack."
"Tell Iasus to take the offensive," he said. "Close with the nearest enemy ship. Use it as a shield and launch assault rams. Turn Captain Hierax and his destroyers loose on its bridge."
As he reached the ruined bulkhead, Gilliman paused.
"Theoretical,"
he said to his warriors. "This is more than a simple boarding attack." He looked at Prato. "Are you sensing anything?"
Prato was frowning.
"Not a build-up, exactly. Nothing in our vicinity to suggest they're planning it."
He grimaced.
"A sorceress assault?"
The word still did not come easily to anyone in the Legion, even the Psykers.
"But there is something. A presence, I think. Not far."
"Then we are forewarned," Gilliman said.
He kicked at the buckled door, knocking it out of its frame. He advanced into the corridor more cautiously. Shattered ferrocrete cladding littered the deck. Another splinter had broken through 50 yards down, but there did not appear to be any word-bearers nearby. Gilliman glared at the shard as he moved past it. It protruded through the hull of the Samothrace as a thing of jagged diagonals and broken lines. Its shape was crystalline. He shared a look with Prato.
"This result was not achieved by technological means," the librarian said.
"But this isn't the source of what you're detecting?"
"No."
The wind's keen was high and savage. The twitching light of the ruined storm leaked through the fissures between the splinter and the broken hull. Past the shard, the corridor curved as it approached the port corner of the superstructure. From the bend onwards, the lumen globes in the ornate bronze wall sconces had been smashed. Here the shadows had breached the Samothrace. They waited for Gilliman. He knew it, and was ready. He raised the arbitrator. He held the gladius in candor low at his side, blade angled outwards.
"It's close," Prato said.
"Is it human?" Gilliman asked. His reason still rebelled against the word demon.
"I'm not sure. It seems grounded in the materium."
"But it isn't a space marine." Prato hesitated.
"I don't know,"
he admitted.
"I'm picking up thoughts. It knows you are coming."
"Well, this is hardly surprising."
"It is eager."
"Noted."
Gilliman was eager too. He anticipated a trap, but he would not deny his anger. The ambush had happened on the edges of Ultramar, but still Ultramar. The boarding of the Samothrace was another insult. He would seek redress in traitor's blood.
"Theoretical," said Gorod. "If the boarding assault has no practical chance of taking the ship, its target must be a narrower one."
"Me," said Gilliman.
"Titus's evidence points in that direction."
"I agree."
"Your practical had better not involve me leading from the rear."
"I'll revise it."
"See that you do."
They reached the shadows and the curve. The corridor stretched several hundred yards in darkness. Sparks from ruptured electrical conduits created a feeble glow around the De Profundis splinter at the far end. When Gilliman rounded the corner, rasping, inhuman bellowing erupted from inside the shard. The darkness around the splinter deepened, and the wind grew stronger. The shadows began to bubble and smoke. Cracks appeared in the decks and walls, spreading outwards from the shard.
The thing inside was taking apart the reality of the Samothrace. Gilliman ran. The Invictus guards and Praeto charged forwards with him. They hurtled down the corridor, Arbitrator and Bolters sending a mass reactive barrage ahead of them. There were no visible targets, but they had to be there. This is a trap, Gilliman thought as he pounded deeper into the shadows. The enemy knows I have to respond. The threat is real and I must counter it, so this is when they will spring the ambush. He understood that the ships of three legions and the Void War in its totality were the means to the end that would come now. I should be flattered, he thought. The shadows were thick as pitch. They pressed against Gilliman, trying to slow him. Even with his enhanced vision, he couldn't see more than a couple of paces ahead. The spreading red cracks illuminated nothing except themselves. The splinter seemed to hunch lower, melding itself into the fabric of the Samothrace. Gilliman cut through it within Kandor. He shot it as though it were flesh. The Ultramarine's gunfire hit home. Dying word-bearers materialized from the dark. Their brothers, giving up on futile concealment, retaliated. Gilliman took the return fire seriously. He snapped off shots at every muzzle flash. His focus flicked back and forth from the attacks in the blackness to the spreading disintegration and the splinter at its center. Neither was the true assault. Either could be its source. On his right, Praeto stretched an arm. A blast of psychic lightning tore through the darkness. It burned through the gorget of a word-bearer and set his head on fire, but still the darkness intensified. The roars from inside the splinter grew louder. They were mocking, triumphant. As Gilliman reached the shard, two squads of word-bearers erupted from the dark. They surrounded him, attacking with chainswords and power blades. He parried and slashed within Kandor. He exploded helms and skulls with the Arbitrator. Gorod and the others cut into the word-bearers, trapping them between Gilliman's cold rage and his bodyguard's lethal precision. And this is still not the real attack, Gilliman thought. He plunged the Gladius in Kandor through ceramite marked with spidery runes of such density they seemed to crawl. He drew the blade to the right, cutting armor and muscle, disemboweling the traitor. The front of the shard was open, and he moved inside, leaving the struggle at the entrance behind. He advanced three steps, seeing nothing at first. There was only the cloying black. Then the monster lunged out of the night. It was massive, spined and horned. Its jaw was long and powerful enough to snap iron. It could never have been human, but the remains of Word-Bearer's armor clung to its tree-trunk limbs. The old markings were still there to be read, as if the powers that had transformed the word-bearer desired all who saw it to know what it had once been, and know despair. Warp-fire tendrils arced from its body to the sides of the splinter, turning into webs, then cracks. This thing was the source of the disintegration. In the distortion of form, the complete desolation of anything human, and the mockery of the preserved armour, Gilliman saw the distillation of the perversion and treachery of the 17th Legion. He jerked back, firing the Arbitrator as the monster lashed out with a massively clawed hand. The blow threw off his aim, and the shell punched through its left shoulder, disintegrating flesh and spines. The monster snarled and lunged. It was fast, and its movement slid between the real and the immaterial, hard to track and counter. Gilliman blocked a strike within Kandor, but then the claws were suddenly coming from a different angle, and the creature seized him. It was huge, half again as tall as he was, and its flesh was still shifting, mutating, growing in the glory of its ascended state.
"I am Doc Denenoth," it boomed with a double voice. "I am unburdened, and I will unburden your ship."
It bent Gilliman backwards, acid dripping from its jaws. Gilliman heard the first cracks in his armour. He resisted, and the monster grew even larger, fed by the warp. Tok Derenoth's eyes were a milky white, but patterns swirled in them, forming and dissolving runes. Gilliman tore his arms free. He fired and stabbed into Tok Derenoth's chest. The stream of shells blasted a hole a foot wide in the monster's chest, breaking its hold and hurling it back. Gilliman drove the gladius deep into the wound, puncturing things that had once been organs. Tok Derenoth howled, the twinned voices wrapping around Gilliman's mind in pain and fury. Gilliman poured bolter shells into the thrashing beast. The web of disintegrating unreality began to withdraw. The crimson light dimmed, and the substance of the splinter became more stable. It began to resemble a fragment of a void ship's bridge once again. Undulating mounds became the wreckage of cogitators and pict screens. The floor shifted from tissue to ferrocrete. The shape of a command throne began to appear in the centre of the darkness.
"I want you off my ship," Gilliman said.
He advanced, emptying the arbitrator's magazine into the monster, driving the deathless thing back, reclaiming reality inside the splinter. He measured every step, calculating his position with respect to the outer hull. The sounds of battle behind him grew quieter and more distant. The splinter was long, many times longer than any boarding torpedo. Gilliman had thought of it as a dart striking the battleship. He was wrong. It was a worm that had worked its way into the body of the Samothrace. He moved deeper and deeper into the dark maw until he reached a point where the splinter extended beyond the outer hull. He forced the unburdened back even further, then trained the arbitrator's fire on the floor of the splinter. The shells blew huge rents in the material. Gilliman arced the shells from the deck to the walls, carving out a circular fissure in the shard. No longer battered by the combi bolter, Tok Derenoth moved forwards. The unburdened was slow at first, so much of its mass lying shredded on the deck. But darkness fed it, embraced it, and gave it rebirth. Bones reformed, the chest sealed, the shattered jaw was whole again. The monster charged, shaking the deck. The splinter began to come apart. Tok Derenoth was a few paces away when Gilliman finished soaring through the shard. He blasted away the last of the splinter's integrity. Metal snapped and tore. The void appeared through the gap. The fierce wind of escaping atmosphere blasted through the narrow tunnel. Gilliman stood strong against it, but Tok Derenoth stumbled. The rear portion of the splinter fell away, carrying the unburdened with it. The monster clung to edges of the gap, already too distant to leap. It stared at Gilliman with its white eyes. Its crocodilian jaws opened and closed, snapping in frustration as its prison took the unburdened further and further into emptiness. Gilliman turned away and marched into the wind. He was almost halfway down the length of the splinter when he realized he had misread Tok Derenoth's reaction. The unburdened had not been raging. It had been laughing. Understanding came too late. He had relaxed his guard. The shadows ahead and behind parted. Gilliman saw the dull blades in their hands and cursed the depths of his foolishness.